like something's bothering you.
There's nothing bothering me, honey, that a piece of roast beef can't fix up.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Pops. A man works hard, then comes on home. Expects to find stew with that fine ham bone. He opens the door, then starts to look in.
Say, woman, what's this stuff you cooking? Now all that beef and no potatoes, I just seen right there like a green tomato.
Here I'm waiting, palpitating with all that meat.
And no potato. All
that That's Louis Armstrong with Velma Middleton and the Louis Armstrong All-Stars Orchestra with All That Meat and No Potatoes. It's from Satch Plays Fats, Armstrong's 1955 tribute to Fats Waller, who co-wrote the song and made it famous in 1941. From St. Louis, Melba, I should say Velma, not Melba, Velma Middleton, for many years was the lead vocalist and sometime comedian for Armstrong and his All-Stars. She died while on tour with him in Freetown, Sierra Leone in 1961. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. You can't tell me you don't have an opinion about what has happened in this past week. So much to talk about. From your perspective, this is the purpose of this program, to encourage the creation of a delicious brew, a delicious stew, if you will. Add your intellectual flavor and share your views about the issues and events of the day or anything else you think is worthy of consideration. You're in the driver's seat. It is your day. It is Free Your Mind Friday. The number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and we can get the conversation started. I couldn't help but regret it's just so sad. Everything this week, lots of very sad news, and it's almost overwhelming. And just the same, in the middle of all of that, just life goes on. It's as if, well, we'll just figure it out as we go. But, you know, after a while, it does overwhelm you. It does get to you. And still, we have to maintain a kind of optimistic and positive attitude in terms of what we can do to change. But, of course, it starts with thinking right. 888-874-4888. We start in New York with Joel. You're on the air, Joel.
Hi, Utrice. How's your week been?
Overwhelming. But I also had the great pleasure of participating in a retreat, Gary's retreat. It was incredible.
Yes.
It was really, really something. And
I can imagine.
Some good old Lead Stories listeners were there as well, so I had a chance to bond with them.
Excellent.
But more importantly, just to be in an environment where people are so concerned and proactive about their health. It was great. A fantastic, fantastic week. So let's hear about you.
Well, I came across a piece the other day in Alternet that was all about wealthy New York residents bashing the poor. And I thought I would share it with you guys today, and perhaps you could offer your comments as well. You know, when I read this article, there's an old joke that I thought of, the joke is that the Germans will never forgive the Jews for Auschwitz. And there's an American variant of this, and that is that America will never forgive blacks for slavery. And it seems to me that oppressors and abusers, and even the beneficiaries of past abuses, often project their own guilt, their self-loathing and dehumanization onto their victims, and then hate them for being evidence of the abuser's moral rot. You know what I mean? So,
yes.
So it is with the rich and the poor, and I read this story in Alternate, and it was all about that. It's written by a woman named Tana Ganeva. I'd never heard of her before, G-A-N-E-V-A, so people can follow it themselves. And it focuses mainly on a Facebook page called 33rd, called Third and 33rd and Beyond. And it's put up, and I'm quoting now from the article, quote, by the residents of Murray Hill and Kipps Bay, predominantly wealthy neighborhoods on the east side of Midtown Manhattan, where buildings have doormen and British-sounding names like the Wilshire, the Sycamore, and Windsor Court, close quote. And the article speaks about these, you know, wealthy residents spending an inordinate amount of their incalculably valuable time prowling the neighborhood looking for homeless people upon which they can pour their digital vitriol. And, of course, bashing Mayor de Blasio for actively encouraging, and the word that came across in the article again and again was dangerous scum. They all use it. Dangerous scum to pollute their classy surroundings and drive the city as a whole straight into the gutter. It's de Blasio's fault. Now, I'm not going to, you know, exhibit the story here, but I think people should give it a read, especially the part where the author goes in search of the, quote, scum being shamed not only by these upper-class twits on social media, but also by big-time blunderbusses like Fox and the New York Post, which has picked up the story and have been going with it. And so the story is very, very telling. But unfortunately, Utrecht, there's nothing new about the theme. I mean, I've been living in New York all my life with, you know, a few exceptions. And every time a Democrat, you know, and I don't really care for the Democratic Party, as you know, but every time a Democrat is elected mayor of New York, the city suddenly becomes, and you might remember this when you were editing here, the city suddenly becomes a hellhole of crime and filth where the lower orders are turned loose by hateful liberals who shackle the noble NYPD whenever it tries to impose order and protect the properties. And every time a Republican is elected, like Bloomberg or Giuliani, New York is suddenly transformed into a sleek, clean, efficient city where people know their place and cheerful cops keep the bad people in line. Doesn't matter what the actual statistics are, what the actual realities might be, the same perceptual dynamic plays out over and over again. But then again, it's always been this way in our city. It predates, you know, the Democrat and Republican drama. The wealthy New York elite and their servitors in the press and in the business world have always railed about the degeneration of the city in the hands of one grubby, grasping minority, you know, or another. It was the Irish, the Italians, the Jews, the Hispanics, and, of course, the African-Americans, who've been the eternal scapegoats of New York's ruling class since the days when those elites were buying and selling black people in the slave market on Wall Street. All have had their turn on the pillory. So this story seems to be a unfortunately telling encapsulation of what our modern elites are thinking and how much so many of them utterly despise all those who have been damaged, lost, hobbled, you know, or destroyed by our unjust system or by personal tragedy or psychic demons. I think, you know, I'm thinking of Shakespeare, who spoke of a thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. So their pitiless is breathtaking and sick-making.
Thank you for making that contribution today and getting us started. Also in New York, we have Patricia. You're on the air, Patricia.
Good afternoon, Utrecht, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you.
I'd like to provide some levity today because I don't know about yourself and the PRN family, but I'm actually having a good time watching this debate. Should Joe Biden get in? Should he stay out? Hillary publicly is saying, oh, he has to make up his own mind. And then today in the paper, there was an article that behind the scenes, she is trying to convince him not to run. And then, of course, there's Al Sharpton, who has been demoted. You know, maybe this Democratic strategy is not really working after all. Because I don't know if you realize, he used to come on WLIB in the evenings. But now, Utrecht, and I'm sure there is no connection to your 1 p.m. time slot, but he's now on LIB at 1 p.m. in the afternoon.
And we will be kicking butt
Do you think
at
maybe he's trying
time.
To compete with us? And then, of course, oh, my God, my ginkgo. I didn't take my ginkgo today. I just lost my train of thought, you trees.
You need ginkgo to remember to take your ginkgo.
That you're absolutely correct. But, you know, if this wasn't – oh, and that's right. And in addition to Sharpton moving his time slot to 1 p.m. in the afternoon, now we hear that he will no longer be on Politics Nation from in the evenings during the weekdays. He has now been bumped from weekday visiting to only on Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. So maybe he isn't producing what they thought he would produce, which is a captive black audience to the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
So
you mentioned
I find all
strategy.
Of this quite amusing.
What? You mentioned a Democratic strategy. What is this strategy, you think?
Well, you know, for me, it's clear, because if you even listen to, you know, you listen to these pundits, and they're already talking about the fact that the Hispanic vote is so important to the Democratic Party. I mean, they don't have to worry about the black vote. They already have the black vote. They already have the black vote sewn up. So the Democratic strategy is we're not even on their agenda. You know, they keep telling us what the issue is. For me, my issue is staying alive. My issue is the life of my son and my grandchildren. And that should be the most important thing to black people, because you don't need income inequality if you're 6 feet under. You don't need Obamacare if you're 6 feet under. You need to stay alive. And staying alive should be the number one black agenda of the Democratic Party. And nobody's talking about black staying alive.
Hmm. Thank you, Patricia. But, you know, I was very, very taken aback when you said you wanted to provide some levity, because it turns out it is absolutely true. All the things that you just said, they cause you to chuckle, because it is so transparent, the contempt that they have for people, that they can openly conduct a so-called campaign this way and be taken seriously by the media. It's ridiculous. But of course, here on Lead Stories, we know this. We know all the details of the strategy.
Well, you know, Yatrice, what concerns me is that it's not just that they, you know, have developed this strategy. They have executed it so well in mm-hmm. the black community. And you shared a phrase with me that I need to remember, because no matter what I say to my friends, no matter what I say, they refuse to even listen.
A time will come very soon when they will be listening, because they'll have no choice. Thanks for your call. From Berkeley, California, Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello, wonderful Yatrice.
Hello, wonderful Harvey. What's up today?
Well, you know, I think you're right. You opened up the show with talking about change, and I feel that we need a change of consciousness. And what America, I don't know, I seem to be moving to a different drummer, but what America sees as a curse, I see as a blessing. It's diversity on every level. And I think that because there's three great groups here in America, the African-American group, the Asian group, and the Caucasian group, we're always at odds with each other. But in most places, you know, if you look around the world, there's conflict everywhere. And it's usually two groups, like North Korea and South Korea. But even that breaks down, and it just, you know, that's the way we are. It just seems that we sort of take umbrage with the differences of others. But I say strength through diversity. That's the consciousness that I live by, strength through diversity. It's because of diversity that we're still around, that we're the strongest nation, and that we're at relative peace. I know there's murder every day on every level. It's unbelievable. But I still see that strength through diversity, not hatred of the other, but entangled with the other. And that's the consciousness that I'm looking for out there. And I hope we find it. I know there's many forces that work against it. The military-industrial complex, you know, to them, peace is hell. So they need, they want us all at each other's throats. But I think with the coming of the internet, the fractal nature of it, that we're all part of a bigger structure and stretching across the planet, that we will be come into that purview of strength through diversity over hatred. And we won't be, you know, we can overcome the forces that would divide and conquer us, all of us. You know, everyone suffers. So that's what I'm looking for here. And I want to thank you once again for your great show and your great self.
Well, this is our great show because we're all in it. Thanks so much for your call, Harvey. From Brooklyn, William, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Sister Yitzchak.
How you doing?
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
You know, I'm so happy to hear you, my sister. And you're doing such a superb job. Excuse the noise. I'm in a place of noise. I'm on the plantation. Well, what I really want to speak about is you. You know, the work, you know, I sit down sometimes and you really touch my heart because, you know, with the health challenges that you're facing, you know, you're still out there. Now, I'm disappointed in the people because from my vantage point, what we should be doing, we have a job. You are doing your job superbly, despite the fact that you're facing the health challenges, which I know won't be a problem, because with the help of Gary, it's going to be, and the other brother, you're going to be fine. This I know. Now, what we should be doing to make, instead of crying, complaining, and moaning, and groaning, what we should be doing is forming little circles that have people, you know, pass the word on to people so they could listen, so they could become a part of it. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Not only that, it's so sad that, you know, it's good what Gary's doing. And to you and I, we know, most of us knows that color really doesn't matter. It's a trick. But to see that Gary, white, which it doesn't matter, because he's more of a brother to us than many brothers. He's providing you with the health care. And we out here, what we should have done is provide you with whatever is necessary. For example, look at Rush Limbaugh and them. These guys are making millions of dollars. Now, why aren't we sending money to you to make sure you have what you need, considering the work you're doing? Because none of these people, Rush Limbaugh, none of them, can compete with you.
Well, I'm kind of bowled over by their call. I thank you for expressing your thoughts this way, but I really see my work as, you know, what it is I've always wanted to do, and all of my life, it's been a priority for me. So, whether you're sick or not sick, you know, that's what I want to do. So I continue. I hear you about supporting, but I think, too, that people have to come to those things, those decisions, in their own way. I'm kind of speechless, actually, about what it is you've just said. It's very, very heartwarming, and I thank you for your generosity of spirit. I really do. It's a wonderful sentiment, and I feel this way across the board. I think people who are involved in good work, and many of them have done it at the expense, literally, of their health and of their lives, and communities need to step up and surround them. I say that about the work of Alton Maddox all the time. Here is a person who has selflessly devoted his professional life, his entire professional life, to fighting for people and their rights. And one would think now that for 25 years, this man has been put up against a wall. He has not bowed at all. But we don't see members of his own profession coming forward and saying, this is wrong. This should not happen. Just yesterday, I read a story about Judge Joe Brown, who is going to jail. Judge Brown was on television, had one of those shows dealing with, cases in the court. But he was trying to represent a woman in a child custody case and offer his services pro bono, and was attempting to represent her vigorously. A judge, a fellow judge, well, he wasn't a judge at the time he took the case on, reprimanded him and caused him basically to serve 5 days in jail for contempt of court because he told the judge the truth, that the judge knew that there was an alternative available to the woman who he was representing, but he chose instead to be punitive. And with that, the judge hearing the case threw him in jail. Now, one would have expected in a situation like that, that lawyers across the board would say, hey, no, this is, we're not going to have that. We are just not going to have that. And we're standing with Judge Brown on the basis of principle. We saw Donald Trump throw out the most highly visible Latino reporter out of a news conference. And what did the reporters in the room do? They just sat there. That room should have emptied itself and left Donald Trump holding a monologue at the podium. But of course, they have considerations. They know they would lose their jobs. They can't go back to their jobs and say, well, I took a position. But of course, it requires that level of response. And to see how it was very embarrassing, and I felt very sad, because there was a moment where courage was needed. It was just not to be found. So in so many spheres, people are doing the work. And in so many ways, they walk alone. And sometimes they accept that. I mean, I accept that I do my job. I do what I want to do. And it is great if people find it useful, like you do, William. I want to thank you for that again. But I don't do it for acclamation. I do it because that's what I want to do. That's what I set out to do as a profession. And I like it very much. But I appreciate your sentiment greatly. I feel strongly with it because in my view, so many people have just gone to really bad ends for lack, as my good friend, the late John Henry Clark said, for lack of a friend, and meaning support. So it's great that you feel that way. I really concur. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So we have another call from Los Angeles this time. DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, and good morning from California to you and to all the PRN listeners. My thoughts today, I have a couple of questions for us to ponder. And actually, William brought up one of them, so I guess I'll start there. You are absolutely right that people don't come out to support people who could be, who they could be in the same situation if they're not careful. And you gave the example of the reporters, but I would take it even down to when you see people being stopped by the police or whatever, people just keep going and passing by, and that's, but for the grace of God, there go I, I mean, we have to think about people who are in this struggle with us and not have this singular individual mentality that we seem to have. And this behavior is learned. This singular mentality is put into us. Like we have to look out for ourselves and the ones closest to us, and that's it. But we have to realize that we're all connected. We're all connected. Another question I have to ponder is, why? I mean, I don't want you to get me wrong about what I'm about to say. I love PRN. I love your show. But I get frustrated sometimes because we sit here and we fall for the nonsense that's going on in the mainstream media. And I've always advocated that we should not patronize cable, satellite TV, any of this nonsense that's going on. Don't give Donald Trump one second of airtime. I wouldn't even discuss him. He's such a buffoon. And I really don't care about him. So I get frustrated when I hear this sometimes when we're talking about the Republican debates, we're talking about Donald Trump or Rick Perry or whoever. These clowns don't deserve our attention. And I think that the mainstream media puts that there for a lot of reasons, but one of the main reasons is to distract us from the work that needs to be done and get us talking. When we're talking, we're not doing anything most of the time. So I encourage everybody to just cut the TV off, because it's brainwashing. It's not doing you any good. I haven't had satellite or cable since, I don't know, it's been 8-9 years now. I really am not interested in it. Everything I want to see, I look up on the internet or listen to on the radio, and that's it, So in that way, I'm kind of more in control of what goes into my brain. I wanted to also say that it also frustrates me. I think one of the callers already mentioned something about this, but I've often wondered why stations like PRN and even KPFK, which is the local progressive station here in Los Angeles, and sites like Democracy Now, they don't promote the actual work that's going on out there in the streets as well as they should. I know there's mention sometimes about things that are going on. People are demonstrating here or this or that, but I think the support is not there. And I think that when we get to really getting down to the work that needs to be done, these stations need to broadcast what's going on in a more effective way and tell people, and also outreach. Like if I've wondered why PRN, KPFK, and all these stations don't advertise on mainstream media, like CNN, MSNBC. Why don't they advertise on there? And you could ask the listeners for some money. I know it's very expensive, but I'd be willing to pay, and I know a lot of listeners would be willing to pay, because what we're doing mainly with these stations is we're preaching to the choir. We need to grow the audience in an effective way. And I think that if they would do things like that on major radio stations, major television stations, just advertise, we wouldn't have such a limited scope or audience.
Well, one of the things, I hear you, and you have a very strong point, but I also heard what you said about what it is we need to do, and what we need to do is to pick up the challenge of broadening those media outlets that are, in fact, doing the job. with respect to lead stories, I know there have been listening clubs that are forming. I mean, I didn't ask that. It was just incredible that people have been telling me they started listening clubs. They listen every day, and they have ways of reaching each other and you know, discussing what we discussed on the program. And that helps to broaden the reach of the program and the station. So we do need that kind of help. Those people right. who find value in what we do at PRN should, you know, help with the advertising. Start where you can most successfully, and that is within your circles or spheres of influence. So that helps.
But I only have one problem with that, is that we don't have a lot of time here. This thing is going down fast, and things are changing, you know.
But you got to do the work, too. If you find, you know, like I on the program, you would hear me do interviews with people who normally wouldn't get coverage. And that is
right.
because they're doing good work, and we need to let people know about that. And the more we let people know about that, the broader the audience would be, and the more involved and more educated people would be in the issues of the day. So it's just another way of saying what William had raised earlier, which is we have to do our part.
But Yatrice, one last thing. To my point, though, we need to reach millions of people. We don't have time to. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and that's good. You know, listening clubs and all those things. But that takes time. It takes time to build those, as you know, build the following,
yes.
and build all this. We need to get. See, the average person is most people in this country haven't figured out yet that they shouldn't be watching that mainstream media. They're not awake, so. Can you imagine if MSNBC or something like that, they came out with an advertisement, even for a show like Democracy Now, which I don't even like anymore. I used to, but I think she's too commercialized now. But if that came on and people and it reached millions of people all at once, you know, all of those people may not tune in, but a big chunk of audience would just immediately shift over. And this is what I've never understood over the years, is why we don't put our money together and do something like that.
Well, in another way, it is, I mean, the answer, I think, is kind of obvious in that when you do advertise in these realms, you are, in fact, supporting corporate media. And number two,
it is
hardly likely, I mean, that you're going to get a huge return on investment from an audience that ideologically identifies, let's say, with an NBC or New York Times or some other, medium that would also identify with PRN. It is not, I'm not saying it's impossible.
Well, I disagree,
but, you know,
Yatrice. I disagree. I think that most people think that they're watching a left-leaning progressive station when they watch something like MSNBC, but they're really not, but they think
of
they
course.
Are.
Of course. I agree
so
with
looking,
you. We don't disagree at all.
That.
I'm saying that it becomes a matter of the efficiency of the buy. Do you go where you get the most results? In as much as you're cash-strapped anyway, how do you best spend your money? And this is my guess. In the case of PRN, the money is spent in building an infrastructure and building
right.
the capacity to serve as many listeners as possible. PRN is now up to in excess of 30 million listeners. And that is because you have to concentrate on doing the job of growing and the capacity to grow. So that seems to me to be where the money has gone, instead of going for the advertising. It's just a decision. It's just a basic decision on what's the best yield. Your point is well taken about the need of alternative media sources to get the word out a bit more. But I also want to borrow again from what William was saying earlier, that one of the things that would help a lot is utilizing the access that we have in the form of listeners, to just broaden it. If people can just help and say, hey, you know, you should check the site out. That's how I've learned of many sites that have been very useful to me. P- people telling me about them. And so that's the part of the contribution we could make in helping alternative media that are serving our unique informational needs to grow. Thanks for your call today. All right, from Florida, we have Lloyd. You're on the air. Lloyd, are you there? We lost him. All right, we have Rosedale, Queens. Elvis, you're on the air.
Greetings, my professor and my therapist.
You promoted me today.
How are you?
Thank you. Fine, thank you. How are you?
Well, I decided that I needed a little therapy today.
Okay.
So I just got in and I said, let me just at least get whatever little I can get from you. Anything I get is worth it.
Thank you.
All right? I have two quick things I'd like to touch on. You know, I've listened to a lot of people refer to Donald Trump as a clown and quite a few other names and so forth. And maybe it's me, but I beg to differ from that, you know, because I don't think a lot of people really see the danger in the candidacy of Donald Trump, right? And we laugh at other leaders that has come on board and has been involved in the political system, and we thought they were, we said they were clowns and jokers and so forth, and only to our detriment. I see this man representing a dangerous direction that this country is going into. It's heading in a direction that it is to the detriment of many of us as people of color. And he talks about the Mexicans and so forth, and many of our people don't understand that it's not just the Mexicans or people, Latin American folks that he has in his sight, but it's people of color. And so I believe that it's not that the rest of his colleagues are not saying, he's not saying things that they don't wish they would have the cojones to say. Because I think most of them think the same way about us as people of color. So, but this guy, like a few of the other political leaders in this country that has marched on to great and grand things in this country by using the race card, many of them have used it and succeeded. And he, I believe, feels that it is his time to use that. So I'm not going to belabor that anymore. I'm through with him. The point I'm calling about, really, is we are heading into the season of this Labor Day weekend of madness. All right? And my professor, I've been saying it for years, and I've been looking at it for years. I looked at this mass gathering of our people in Brooklyn, Eastern Parkway, all over Brooklyn, and coming on to Labor Day, and it culminates with this grand debacle of all kind of madness and slackness on Eastern Parkway, and some of our people didn't have the nerve to call it Caribbean culture. Again, I don't agree with that. I beg to differ with that. All right, and I noticed that throughout the years we have had this grand event here over this Labor Day weekend, and I have yet to see something, some piece of property the size of a milk carton on Eastern Parkway, right in the heart of Crown Heights, where black folks, African people, has been there long before many of the interlopers that are there now, that is taking over the whole territory of Crown Heights and its adjoining territories. And we don't have, as I said, nothing the size of a milk carton that we can look at. We can put our arms around it and say, this came out of all these years of madness on Eastern Parkway. I asked many times, I've been to some of these gatherings where the folks who run this thing, and I asked them, why is it that we don't have anything that can rival us? what the other groups have on Eastern Parkway. We can pass down Eastern Parkway and see the structure there. That really, it houses the culture of the Caribbean. All those leadership that and those great men and women that has served our community, that has given up their blood, sweat, and tears in our behalf. We want to see a place where they can be honored. The children can come to on a yearly basis. They can be taught about who they are, where they're coming from, what is expected of them. And we can also create jobs for our community, just like all the other groups that have their museum there on Eastern Parkway. And it's a year-round thing that provides all kind of amenities and culture and so for their people. We don't have anything like that on Eastern Parkway. And the other people's museum, they got funding from some of these same politicians that look like us in our community. They helped to make sure that thing is funded, that is created, and it continues to be funded.
I tell you, you are anticipating.
When you pass through Eastern Parkway, which I consider the Fifth Avenue of our community, it should have been. But
well,
now
you are talking about
the
a subject,
Fifth Avenue
Elvis.
Of another community. And somewhere along the way, when that group gets ready and says we're going to kick this stuff out of this community, we can't even say we have a right to be there because we own this our cultural center right here on Eastern Parkway. Look at
well,
it. When we
Elvis,
drive through Eastern Parkway,
Elvis,
we can see this structure.
What I'm trying to say is that you are anticipating a commentary I'm going to be doing next week on this very subject. I've said for years that this is more than a parade. When you have more than 2 million people assembled in one place, it's more than a parade. It's the population greater than many small nations. So I'll be doing a commentary about this because it really needs to be said on so many different levels that this so-called parade should really mean more than just a bunch of people jumping up and down on the parkway. Thanks for your call today. Lloyd, I hear you back with us.
Yes, yes. Miss Lee, can you hear me now?
Yes, indeed. Thank you for coming back.
It's my pleasure, dear. I'm glad that you're on the road to recovery in the good hands of Gary Noel.
Yes.
And I hope to hear from you more often. My comment is, I heard a gentleman earlier mention about how people walk away when they see cops brutalizing people, citizens on the street and don't do anything about it. And something I noticed from all the way from the Vietnam War about how the citizens were exercising their right to protest. And as time went by, it's like the authorities realize that we have to find a way to deter people, good citizens, who want to, get involved to where the consequences are not so dear. Look at that gentleman in Staten Island who just took a video of the cop beating down Eric Garner, and look at what he's going through. The cops harassing him every day, his parents put him in jail for some trumped-up charge, as much as I believe. And it kind of deters people from wanting to get involved. And we have to find a way to find a way to get to the legislature to stop deterring or making the consequences so dear for civilians taking up, doing their civic duty as for reporting these violent acts. People should be able to feel free to get involved and say, hey, look, I want to, stop this cop from beating up this woman. But they're afraid because, they're going to get $100,000charges in jail and jail time. And, we have to find a way to hit that. Do you have any ideas on how is that possible?
Well, I don't think it's possible that we should look. First of all, I don't think if you really believe in something, you do not need permission to act. if you really believe, irrespective of whether there is a, quote, law, unquote, that would protect you as you exercise your rights, you should just have the courage to do it. We don't need permission to do the right thing.
Well, excuse me, maybe you
but your point
mean,
is what, I mean, I agree with you.
We need permission. I was just basically saying when a citizen decides to stand up,
right?
And why are the authorities beating down the person that will help to make the case be a little bit clearer to the public that, oh, this is what really happened compared to what the police said without
Great.
Getting
because,
any...
Because that's what the system does. And if we understand systems, that's what the system would do. It is just doing what it will do, what it's designed to do.
But what happened in the 1960s when the Vietnam Wars was going on? There were a lot of protests going on. And yes, there were some heads being beaten and stuff like that. But people kept coming. They kept coming. And even the ones that did get arrested, they didn't go to jail for 5 years and have their finances and their whole life turned upside down for any length of time. What changed?
I think what changed is the mindset of people. People are under extraordinary stress these days, and they weigh even their actions that are in accord with their beliefs. They even are now weighing the consequences against the likelihood that, you know, they are going to suffer for taking a principled stand, and they make a calculation that they'll pass up on one thing or another because the consequences are too dear. Also, because it has been shown so often that people who have taken principled stands are also very much alone. they're not supported. So again, I mean, it's natural and logical for many people to say, well, why should I extend myself to a fate of certain, negative consequences when I have a family, I have things I need to do and take care of, and they weigh it that way because they see that in cases where one would expect an overwhelming outpouring of support, the support isn't there. So they make the practical decision, and we can't blame people for that. You know, people have to do the things that are in their interests, and if the minuses outweigh the pluses, you can't blame a person for saying, well, you know, this time I can't do that. It's too much to lose. But if we have a constant evidence that people will, on the basis of principle, step forward and become involved, make their voices heard, make their bodies seen in support of things that require a bit of courage, it would in turn encourage people to take more principled action, I think. That's just my thinking. Well, thanks for that call. Let's go to New Jersey. Pat, you're on the air.
I'm really happy that you're on the air and that you're doing well. And
you're
such an inspiration to so many people. And keep up the wonderful work.
Thank you. I think we all are doing the best we can.
How you're managing so successfully. And good to hear that you attended Gary's retreat and that you had a very positive health outcome.
Oh, very much so. I'll be doing a little bit more talking about that another time. But go ahead. Let's hear what you have to say.
I'm going to say some things, and I'm not intending to scare people. But I listened to many broadcasts. I'm on the internet a lot. I listen to PRN, your show, other shows, but I also listen to other media. And there's some things that are happening that normal people who work for a living, normal people that have their responsibilities, don't hear because it's not part of their normal listening. And so, United States is in a very bad place economically. There's going to be a collapse. The United States is in a very bad place geopolitically. There's going to be a war. There is, behind all this, there is something else that's happening and that maybe your listeners wouldn't have heard. And this is that we are coming to the end of a seven-year period, and the end transition is called the Shemitah. The next seven-year period, people have heard, it's called the Tribulation. In order for us to go through the Tribulation, and this is going to include the war, the famine, this is going to include pestilence, this is going to include, in addition to which, everyone has heard about CERN, that's the big physics project there they have in Switzerland. And what they haven't heard, and what some people are saying, is that there will be portals that are opening to other dimensions, and that there are entities that are going to be coming in that are very negative, very demonic entities, and that the elite have the ability to manifest this on the earth. And this is part of the unfortunately horrible circumstances that a lot of people are going to be seeing during this called the Tribulation. And everything that we do now to fortify ourselves is very important. If people have had solace in their religion, please understand that the pastors who do not connect you to the divine support and protection that you are entitled to are going to be harshly dealt with in the Tribulation. And they have traded a materialism. They've traded having a successful, happy, comfortable, economically viable existence for the work that they really needed to do. And so I want to end this with those people who are believers, those people who have access to a church. They need to go one step farther, and they need to seek the protection, seek the divine protection, which they are entitled to by being saved. And
okay.
There are miracles that are going to occur to people who are going to be saved. And unfortunately, a lot of people are going to be seeing a lot of horrible things, and at that point, they will try to call out for divine help.
Well, one of the things I really am very skittish about, I have no problem admitting it, is this is an area I veer away from, because everybody has a different religious or spiritual orientation. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate where you're going with it, mm-hmm. but I don't know that we can recommend a spiritual path for everyone. I mean, that's
well, individual, I just pointed to those people
choice.
Who are already churchgoers. They're already in a denomination, and their pastors are not likely to be in a position to recommend this. But you need to have a personal relationship with the Lord, personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
All right. Well,
and
I try to be very delicate about it. Not everybody believes in Jesus Christ, and so when we assume that that's what everybody believes or everybody should believe, what we're doing is imposing a spiritual interpretation upon other people. I prefer that people take care of this particular piece of business themselves, because this is a highly private matter, and it is hinged upon personal belief, personal need, and so forth. So I appreciate where you were going, but we do have to be mindful that we can't prescribe spiritual paths for people. It is something that I think is up to individuals to decide. This is one area. Friends who I know for 30, 40 years would tell you, I never ask about their spiritual views. That's their business. I don't ask about your political philosophy or your political party. That's your business. But we can talk about those things that we have broadly in common. And that is where I think we need to start engaging. Thank you so much. We have only a little bit of time, but I think, Walt, from Virginia, we can accommodate a fast call. You're on the air. Okay, well, Walt isn't on the air. He went bye-bye. Let's see. We have, okay, Gwen hung up as well. Gwen got tired. Well, thank you so much for calling and contributing to the program today. This is the point. The whole point here is to be brave enough to engage in discussion and to express ourselves, to raise questions and things that would cause people to think some more about our shared existence, what it is that we call life, and how we live it or don't live it on a daily basis. So I want to thank you for your calls today. And pretty soon I'm gonna try and rev things up a little bit. I used to like putting people on together and listening on the conversation that they have. So we're going to give that a try. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for maintaining a consistently high standard of discussion on this program. It is a compliment to not just the program, but to fellow listeners that we keep it at that level. And it makes me so proud to be able to say that people have legitimate points of view that they want to express and that have a place in public discussion. And the job we have to do as media outlets is to encourage the exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. Have yourselves a great weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life. Don't waste a nanosecond with anybody negative. Get them out of your sphere. And we'll see each other on Monday. A great program scheduled on Monday. We'll be talking about a word that, if you remember, this was a conversation I had some years ago that caused the interviewee to go nuts when I called him out as a nativist. So we'll be talking about nativism on Monday and the current climate that we're in. Until then, please know what a joy it is and a pleasure and a great privilege for me to be in your esteemed company. Bye-bye.